This is session number 56, recorded on February 25th, 2008, side A. And we're finishing up the Bob Dobbs formula chart. What have we done about, we started about number 46, Scott. And this is about the 10th or 11th session on it.
Yeah.
So what, I got a few things I want to say, but you have some, a question or two, right? From, carried over from last time?
Right. I believe we started the formula chart on, well, I'll have to look that up. I think it was maybe session 50, because before that we were on the Bob Marshall chart.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right, yeah. Okay, so we've done about 10 or so sessions on my charts, but they've not all been the Bob's formula chart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. So I was noticing something was, you pointed this out along the way, and then I think I forgot to ask about it, which is that if you look at the ALP side of the one-half stage, it leads off with telegraph at the first level, and then you notice that you get telegraph again two levels down from there at the radio, next, just to the right of the radio. So it's, telegraph skips a level before it shows up again. Same thing with movies, same thing with television, satellite, laser beam. When technology shows up in ALP, it doesn't show up in the chart again until two levels down.
Right.
And what happens to it in the intermediate step there where you don't see it anymore?
Okay, if you look at telegraph, movies comes after telegraph, then you get to radio. Technically, you could say movies subsumes telegraph if you use the McLuhan principle that whatever new technology shows up on the scene, it creates a hidden ground, and what was a previous technology, which was previously hidden ground, becomes figure. So that should apply here immediately. But you've got movies in there, and I would say they are ground for a while, and telegraph doesn't become secondary ground or more surface ground until the phase processed. I guess it would take, since you've got several kinds of media, you've got movies, an automobile, an airplane, and cartoon, they tend to be outer technologies. They're not pure electric, like radio, telephone, television, computer. You have to go somewhere. They're not simultaneously broadcast. The automobile and the movie is not simultaneously broadcast when there were only movies. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We can say it has a more mechanical outer aspect. It's not within the interior landscape of electric simultaneity. So you have an oscillation between inner and outer there. And so it's allowing the outer phase to have a phase of being deep ground. And then once you move out of that, then it goes back to a inner. So telegraph waits for movies, then it gets to have a say when you go inner again through radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you see radio actually goes in to the next level, which in the general pattern of the chart doesn't happen. You have to go, it doesn't become secondary ground until two phases down. But you notice it becomes immediate ground, immediate secondary ground in the immediate following phase, the television phase. You see it?
Mm-hmm.
Radio/telephone. So that's because there's no intervening hardware technology. It goes from radio to television, to computer. Satellite laser beam is more outer. And antimatter physical, that's pretty indefinable. So I would say that's what's happening. There's a jockeying with outer media so that the inner media the electric, purely electric, has to wait a phase
mm-hmm.
to become secondary ground, which is what we're calling Shem and Shawn. They're like more surface ground. They're not as deep as the ALP phase.
Mm-hmm.
People are starting to use them, become aware of them in some way. At least the HCE guys are.
Right, and in the ALP stage, the technologies actually don't physically exist yet. They're being
right.
developed.
Right. So, radio is definitely
Well, it makes sense. Like, for instance, you see TV in the ALP stage locking down the one-half world government from 1900 to 1918, but it doesn't show up on the next level because the next level is 1918 to 1945, and television doesn't show up until 1945, so it shows up actually in two levels down from where you first see it in ALP. The same thing with these other technologies.
Yeah, it's maybe... I was conscious of the date, but I'm thinking, you see, when radio is happening as deep ground, you got telegraph and oratory. When television is deep ground, you got movies and radio and telephone. You have the outer media forming a combination, the Shem and Shawn, that somehow prefigures television. So television doesn't exist in 1900, 1918. So you have movies and radio and telephone. And actually, if you merge movies and radio and movies, which is visual, and radio and telephone, you kind of would get mutated into television. So the two categories under Shem and Shawn are actually the constituents leading to the invention of the next medium, which doesn't exist when it's deep ground in the ALP phase, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just an effect preceding the cause. So the Shem and Shawn things are factors, combinatorials, that lead to the actual appearance of movies.
Mm-hmm.
So movies is deep ground. Doesn't exist yet. So you got to go through many years, like you say, to get to the 1900-1918 period, which is when movies are seen. They exist. They've become causes.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's a factor. Maybe we could find some problems in that if you look at each level. But you can see satellite and laser beams, a combination of television and airplane, because you're kind of traveling around the planet with the airplane. So that implies being in a satellite, precursor to the satellite.
Oh, okay.
And radio is the telegraph plus oratory. Oratory is speech. Telegraph is electric visual signals being sent instantaneously. Put the ear of oratory with the eye of electric simultaneity of telegraph, and you get radio.
Yeah.
And since newspapers and printed book, the collage effect of the newspaper page and the singularity of the printed book, both visual mass media, combine them and you get movies.
Mm-hmm.
So as you look at it, it's interesting how the kids, Shem and Shawn, are actually involved in manufacturing the next level. It's almost like if you take the top-level telegraph, combine usury and monarchy and manufacturers, and maybe bring in ISI, they produce a kid, movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then you combine newspaper and printed book and Jefferson, and they produce a kid, radio.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my improvised response. You know, parts of this chart I haven't thought about in so long since they were made in 95. So that was a good question.
Mm-hmm.
That brought out an interesting pattern. So let's look at the bottom. You have homeopathic cliche probes, and that's television and computer and atom bomb. Computer deals with pretty invisible speeds. I don't know how, if you bring computer and atom bomb, and McLuhan said television was way more dangerous than atom bomb for what it did to people psychically. So television is like a software bomb, and then you have a semi-hardware bomb, and the computer in between them, it creates an implosion and an invisibility and the hologram, which becomes homeopathic cliche probe. I did remember that I wanted to say that the word cliche does relate to the word archetypes. You remember when we did the McLuhan part of the book, the interplay of cliche archetypes? And I don't know if I really emphasized this last week, but the subtitle, How the Media Archetypes Fit the Battle of Jericho, that could be how the media cliche probes fit the Battle of Jericho in American politics. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you could actually say homeopathic archetypes at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Archetypes being one step back from the cliche level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anthropomorphical satellite, laser beam, computer, and atom bomb, put those two together, they've got an implosion, you've got a shrinking, and that might produce the bastard child of anthropomorphic physical. Now, we look at the flat line beneath that, the final level. The flat line represents almost the mystery body in the sense you've merged cold fusion. The cold fusion is a merger of first and second nature, which no technology ever did. And to actually merge it is a pretty weird, new, unfamiliar situation. So the flat line represents the indefinable aspect of once you have negentropy created by cold fusion, which is more energy coming out than goes in. All the other media before, they all wind down, right? They're based mm-hmm. on friction levels of energy.
On a metaphorical level, maybe it could relate to the merging of spirit and flesh, in the sense that Jesus was said to be the merging of spirit and flesh, and the resolution of the Gnostic split.
Right, but the that would get into conceptually. I get into a lot of arguments with people, and I wouldn't bring in cultural terms. It's just a physical fact that you've created a technology that doesn't die, which is like first nature.
Mm-hmm.
The larger, powerful energies in first nature don't die. So that is what the flat line means. And you've got sort of a visible environment, satellite laser beam, mating with invisible environments, homeopathic cliche probes, plus me, I'm an invisible environment. Put the three together, we produce something after the cold fusion phase. Because the satellite laser beam and computer and atom bomb and Perot, they're the parents that create the ninth level with the flat line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that we, the my level, me, homeopathic cliche probe, satellite, and laser beam, we combine to create either just an intensification of the flat line. Because
mm-hmm.
it's a mystery dimension. I don't know where we are once we get into the flat line zone of cold fusion as an environment.
Mm-hmm. I was listened to a part of a.
Here's something I should say. Remember, this flatline thing is being built from 1990 to 2020, meaning that it doesn't really become a figure till after 2020. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A large numbers of people are using it. So
using the chart?
No, using cold fusion.
Oh yeah,
a marketable commodity. So here we are. Here we are. We're 18 years. We're halfway into this phase. It's a 30-year phase. We're over half in it.
And still no sign of cold fusion.
Right. I think we're going to have to wait till 2012 approximately. Not necessarily by the Mayan calendar rules, but it's interesting that juxtaposes, but the way things are going in the Middle East and China not getting the oil, that wouldn't really surface, I think, until next 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I guess I got myself down as 2012.
What sort of ruler is Bob? When he locks down Bob Rule?
A non-ruler, probably.
Mm.
Like a Chinese emperor who doesn't even have to perform. Chinese emperors, they were in a friction-based society. They had to perform. I probably won't even have to perform. From 1990 to now, we are getting locked down Bob Rule with the images of me embedded in movies. Like, for example, you just saw, what was the movie with Clooney? What's it called?
Michael Clayton.
Yeah, you just looked at that, saw no indication of me, and then you saw a date in the background and you wanted to stop it just to see what the date was, not thinking of me, and the date was February 2nd, my birthday, and the tape that the date was representing, because the people in the movie were watching a evidentiary tape or something, right? Some evidence or some videotape. And then you looked and it said 14:22, right?
Right, 14 minutes and 22 seconds into the tape.
Yeah, you had stopped it.
Right.
And it, the tape carries on, but you stopped it at the point of the numbers that are in the Dobbs quadrant coming up in the tiny note chart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's pretty interesting synchronicity with me, that experience that you experienced. But that's an example of frictionless ESP going on.
When I first met you, I used to get all wild-eyed when I'd see those kinds of coincidences with numbers and things.
Yeah.
But now it's like, ho-hum, it's like I've seen it so many times. It's like, oh, there it is again. What does that mean? I don't know. But there it is again. Follows me around like a shadow.
Right, and you met me after 1990. You met me in 1995, so you were in this flatline phase where the effects preceding the causes is what's going on. And we're building this new situation, and I'm president during that period, or whatever you want to call me, central focus, chaos butterfly, and this synchronicity is going on ever since Twin Peaks in 1990, you know? Which is exemplifying some kind of molding that I'm engaged in.
Right.
So that's that. So we're already experiencing me as emperor, right? In a new way, in a frictionless-based society. Frictionless-based society, I don't have to do much,
right? But the thing is that I and probably other people keep getting trapped in the concept of thinking of you as a, you know, in terms of your chemical body,
bureaucrat.
Identity and bureaucrat, yeah. But when you refer to yourself as me on the chart, you're referring to five bodies, four of which aren't even human.
No,
well,
one,
three of them anyway.
If you believe the ad, we have astral body, that's human.
Yeah.
Two of them aren't ostensibly human, but the point is these are human. They are something that are parts of us. We're just finding out we're made up of TV and chip body.
Yeah.
And that's uncovering the layers of the mystery body.
Yeah. Most people, like myself, tend to identify more closely with that which can be threatened. Like, for instance, my physical body and its livelihood can be threatened. My TV body, I can turn it on or off. I can have a TV, not have a TV. I see how it's massaging my identity, but I don't see, you know, my consciousness emanates from my brain and nervous system. It doesn't emanate from a television or from a book or from some other form of media. So I tend to centrally identify myself with as my flesh and bones.
Now, if you die and you actually survive death, you will be looking at your life in Akashic Records, which will be like looking at TV. So the TV body will continue in the post-chemical body zone.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that there's Akashic Records.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they ever say, that one reviews their life when once they die in relation to all the other lives you've had and the pattern you intended when you reincarnated.
Right. Now that I'm starting to look at the glow tape transcripts, the glow transcripts where you talked with Marshall and Frank on the other side, they never spoke about having recapitulated their past lifetimes. And they never spoke from the point of view of no longer being identified with the past lifetime. They seem to be behaving as though they were a continuation of the previous lifetime.
The one in the chemical body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Irene say, is that the personality survives death. So we're looking at the personalities of that lifetime that they just had, and the bigger soul that contains all the lifetimes would be engaged on another level and just watching this little personality play a little game with us through glow, you know, fire.
Oh.
And so, yeah, they would just be a subset of the bigger soul that is aware of and watches all the lives.
So even on the astral plane, you're still contained within a discrete personal sense of self, and there's another larger plane in which you are all these different lifetimes.
Yeah, it's like being stoned in LSD. You know, you have that funny detachment. You're watching your meat body go through motions, and you feel like it's almost comic watching it, and you're watching from a higher level or a more detached level, right?
Right.
So now imagine when you're dead and you then become aware of your larger soul, which is monitoring and creating all these lives, it would be quite detached about the little aspect of itself that it just lived, because it's just one of 3,000 lives.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you would feel no problem looking at the present life you just had.
Well, lots of people, you know, you look at James Moody's book, Life After Life, and lots of people have reported having, you know, watched their life flash by.
Yeah, they get into that detached state.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's a life, so called a life review. Now,
I want to just, okay,
go
this
ahead.
Point about me being, you know, not a bureaucrat,
mm-hmm.
we've already gone, you know, we're talking about presidential images. The last one was Reagan. Then we get Perot, who doesn't even become president, but he becomes a media factor, and it's replayed by Ralph Nader and other people, and Ron Paul
yeah.
this year.
I heard today Ralph Nader's getting in the race.
Yeah. So that is, I'm saying that's more important than the president. So actually me, it doesn't mean that I actually live in the White House, so that could happen, that could be included, like the Tom Dobbs scenario. But it's interesting how Tom Dobbs, being a prophetic movie, it was called Man of the Year, came out in October 2006, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tom Dobbs, he turns down being president and continues on operating a more powerful position as TV show.
Yeah.
You know, operating on the post-chemical body, TV body. So that's metaphoric and prophetic of me being president of the American Empire. This is charts about the American Empire in a new, different kind of way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you've said in the past that the White House reflects the word that makes the market, and the White House reflects the Android meme.
The TV body part of the Android meme.
Oh.
The White House has no control over the chips landscape, which is a global economy which we're witnessing evaporate right now.
Mm.
We're witnessing the death of the chip body, or of the chip landscape, which the chip body is a shrinking of,
mm-hmm.
in relation to us and our chemical body. So yeah, the president, the Android meme is more involved with the chip landscape than the TV landscape. The Android meme has the TV landscape as its constituent,
mm-hmm.
but it's juggling three other bodies. That's what.
But the White, you're saying the White House doesn't represent the chip body?
No, the White House is something you can see. It represents a national institution.
Mm-hmm.
There are no national institutions in the chip landscape. As the movie Network came out in 1976, the speech by the corporate head to the TV evangelist, that speech really stands out and explains the post-national world.
Mm-hmm.
That's 30 years ago. That's on YouTube if you ever want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
That part of it.
Yeah.
Network's the movie. That's why, you know, George Bush Sr.
Well, that represents the anthropomorphic physical trying to take its territory back. I'm a human being, God damn it. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it.
Yeah, that's not the anthropomorphic physical. That's the chemical body. The anthropomorphic physical is human consciousness, which engages with the chip body and the TV body. When you're watching, you're on the computer, you don't think you're the computer. There's a part of you that says, I'm manipulating this form.
Mm-hmm.
That thing that doesn't feel that it's just a computer is the anthropomorphic physical. It could be called the sense of the mystery body.
Right.
And so this leads into the second chart, which is a picture of the Android meme.
Mm-hmm.
The tiny note chart is a snapshot of the Android meme.
Right.
Therefore, it's going to have all four bodies plus imply the mystery body in there.
Right.
So, do we want to go to the next chart? Have we talked enough?
Well, I'm going to say a little more about this idea of the quark tune, because I'm always trying to refine or get a sense of how the quark tune is embroidered in this, in this, throughout these media technologies. And I heard, I heard part of a talk that where McLuhan's son, what's his name?
Eric.
Eric was being sort of interviewed informally on some college campus, I think, and it was being broadcast in Second Life virtual reality.
With Ken Hudson, right.
And he says something interesting about the shadow, about the silhouette. When you get to the silhouette is really a perception of the hands, because the hand experiences the surface of things, you know. Close your eyes and you hold something and you put your hand around, feel all the little curves and corners, and you feel the outline of the thing. And so the silhouette is the eye as a hand in a way. And I was thinking that if you take, if you're in the room with somebody, there's a chemical body, physical presence there, and then you take a camera and you film that, and then you watch a film of that person on TV, now you've abstracted, you're no longer looking at a chemical body, but you're looking at a virtual image of that person, but all the information is still there. You can still see hair color and, you know, the clothes they were wearing and everything that they look like. And then if you run some Photoshop effects on that, kind of turn it into a silhouette, it becomes more like a cartoon, becomes more abstracted, there's less information, so it's even cooler. You can even project more of your own imagination into the image. And so I'm wondering, and so maybe in that sense the cartoon is becoming more like a quark, which a quark is something which has kind of disappeared. Well, it's disappeared. But
yeah, I can go along with this.
So you described, when you were describing Kennedy's relationship to the quark tune, you described his relationship with Hollywood, the Hollywood image, and Marilyn Monroe. And then you described the automobile as being more like the Rat Pack and a little closer to gambling casinos and mafia.
Well, the car is becoming like the horse, an art form, a mm-hmm. vehicle of entertainment.
Oh, yeah. So it's being played with.
Yeah.
The quark tune is the quark tune being played with, or is it still too much of an environment to be being played with at the Kennedy?
The quark tune is the cartoon being played with.
Right. You are, in addition to Hollywood, you identified Kennedy's relationship to the West Coast and Disney. And of course, we associate Disney with cartoons. But
the broad outlines, right now, if I think of Britney Spears, I got a couple of high-definition images I've seen in the news or in videos. But in general, she's just this silhouette in my mind.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So we think of all kinds of mediated events in silhouettes. So yes, they're broad, bounding outlines, as McLuhan defines a cartoon. So they're all cartoons. The quark aspect is that I can think of her and I can think of 100 other people. The numbers of people and media images that we engage every day, unconsciously or consciously, it's incredible. They're like particles, electrons, passing in the particle accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, they're subatomic particles, considering how many you
right.
process.
So, like, for instance, if you were to
combine cartoon, and it becomes a quarktoon to show its passing transience.
When you say, if you were to refer to the automobile equals quark, would you be referring to the notion that there are 100 million automobiles, and so every single one of them is like a quark particle, or are you referring to the whole archetype of automobile in general as being a quark?
I guess I'd be referring to both. There's millions of automobiles, and we can't imagine and don't have to see every one of them that are driving for me here in New York City over all the bridges right now. So I kind of make a broad outline, what McLuhan would call a mythic pattern of the automobile silhouette, to refer me to the whole environment of millions of automobiles, millions of little quark vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But the other level is the interplay of the media makes any one of them not so solid. I mean, I can travel by car or travel by radio or travel by computer. I'm shifting my vehicles
mm-hmm.
all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So the interplay of all them makes each one of them like a silhouette. Because it's like tactility. I'm not going to focus on one form too long. I'm going to shift this to another silhouette
mm-hmm.
when I'm thinking of it.
Right. So by the time we get to Kennedy, all media forms fall into the category of quark tunes?
Yeah, because we're getting into the satellite area. And the satellite, just before that, is computer, and the computer is the ultimate speeded-up technology because it modulates the silhouettes and statistics from all the previous media.
Mm-hmm.
So the computer into the satellite makes solid media start to melt. We don't get to real interplay of media and melting of until after the satellite environment, because the satellite is a medium. It's an object, goes up, and it creates an effect. But it's turning the previous media into silhouettes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have here in Kennedy in 1960, satellite has gone up, and it represents 18 to 45, which is technically the radio era. The radio has shown up, and the radio is, in terms of verbal messages and sounds, a quark tune kind of thing. I mean, Joyce was inspired by it to write his quark tune book, Finnegan's Wake, which is, you know, information overload squared, cubed. And McLuhan says that Joyce used the electronic vacuum tube and the electronic nature of matter as a metaphor for what had happened to previous media under radio conditions. So the melting caused by radio is stepped up by television, computer, and atom bomb. So the time of Kennedy. Now remember, the automobile and the quark tune are ground. They're secondary ground. They're just dimly perceived by people. People aren't thinking of these environments as actors on the global theater. You know what I mean?
In the computer atom bomb phase on the ALP side? In other words, in the Kennedy phase, you're saying this is true?
In the Kennedy phase, people aren't even thinking.
Well, the automobiles already, we already pointed out, established the automobile's art form by Kennedy.
Yeah, they start to see it a bit.
So
in 1918 and 45, well before the computer and the atom bomb have shown up, the atom bomb does show up at the end in 1945, that period where the computer and atom bomb is ground, which is represented from 18 to 45, the secondary ground is automobile and quark tune, but they aren't even perceived. They're more a 1960 phenomenon, which is well after the 18 to 45 period. That's why automobile, quark tune, and Kennedy, Shemshon and Issy, go together. They're the kids. You can see the kids.
Mm-hmm.
The parents that are framing them, you don't see. So in 1960, the ground is represented by Kennedy for most people. They can see Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
He's the anthropomorphic, sociological, psychological, human, you could say, mask or leg, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the dynamics in Kennedy are automobile and quark tune. People don't see automobile quark tune. That's the ground of Kennedy. They feel it a little bit. They might see glimpses of it, but they don't have the detachment, and they have no clue about the effects of the computer and the atom bomb.
Yeah, but to be consistent with your chart, they would have to be more, quark tune would have to be more of an art form than the automobile, and closer to closer to being played with.
Well, that's that depends on, remember, you see, I've got movies, in the television phase, I've got movies, which was older than radio. And you're saying Sean is more of an art form. No,
yeah.
Movies would be more of an art form in that phase. Because Sean is closer to the visible anthropomorphic human figure, right?
Right. I thought we established as a general rule that Sean and Issy are closer,
yes,
more closely mated than Sean than Issy and Shem.
That's right. I agree. But they aren't necessarily the chronologically adaptable like that. I mean, Roosevelt is the radio era.
Mm-hmm.
Movies are the anti-environment to radio.
Yeah.
So
movies are older than radio, so they should be, well, in this case, I guess they would be more of an art form.
Actually, you could say they're moving to, as McLuhan says, art form when it's around a long time as an art form becomes archetype. So they're actually arriving in archetypal phase. So cartoon, remember, Quarktoon is cartoons, which people are experiencing
mm-hmm.
at Disneyland. That's definitely happening by 1960. But the subconscious effect of it is Quarktoon. But it's only a dimly perceived subconscious effect. In other words, the Kennedy is going to just be a passing fanny.
So would it be an oversimplification or just wrong to say that Shem is archetype and Sean is cliche?
I'd be tempted to say they hop back and forth because it's a tactile interplay. But if we go telegraph, definitely usury and monarchy is older than manufacturers. So yeah, we could say Shem tends toward more archetypal status than the art form of manufacturer or Sean column. Newspaper, though, is newer than the printed book. So it's art form, but it's archetype. But it is not an older medium. It's newer than a printed book. But the fact that it's in the ground of movies, movies would shape which one is the archetype. You see, telegraph is instant and simultaneous. It's the first software environment. Manufacturers are hardware. So usury and monarchy align more with the effect of the global village having a king, or quote, antichrist, symbolized by usury and monarchy, because you can have a global village under telegraph conditions. When you move into the movies as a ground, the movies is a what McLuhan called a hot and more visual fragmented medium, so it represents the newspaper and the printed book, but definitely the newspaper is closer to the movies, right? Closer
mm-hmm.
to the movies than the printed book, because the newspaper has the beginnings of collage, like a movie has, frame by frame. So the relationships of Shem and Sean are determined by the ALP.
Mm-hmm.
Like radio has telegraph closer to it because it's electric, even though you would think the content of radio was oratory and verbal. But oratory is not the total content of radio. It's the electric effect, and that's simultaneity, so that's telegraph. So you could say the oratory is an art form that sides with Issy, or the Sean column sides with Issy, and the Shem more resonates with ALP, which is in terms of art. The traditional Western bias is that the artist is most influenced by the mother. Have you heard about that?
Makes sense.
Yeah, that a lot of psychohistory of artists over the 20th century have come up with this pattern that a lot of artists tend to be influenced by their mother. Maybe a male artist, so that the right hemisphere...
Yeah, the muse, the feminine muse.
Yeah, and the right hemisphere of the woman affects the artistic right hemisphere side of the artist, which makes one an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the bureaucrat and the scientist tends more towards the issy side. Not that the bureaucrat is not creative or scientists aren't creative. So if we follow that through, you've got here television, which you would think is electric like radio, but you're bringing in the telephone and radio, which is one-on-one, and movies are seen as a visual experience in America, and television is seen as visual. So radio and telephone, even though television and radio are electric and more tactile, the American sees television as a movie. Just more movies, or an expansion of movies in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Movies in your living room. Now, the computer and the atom bomb, you got the automobile and the quark tomb. The atom bomb suggests hardware, so you have the automobile, which is hardware. When you think of bombs, atom bombs, you think of some vehicle carrying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the atom bomb is carried in a car, actually in a plane, but it's carried in a hardware thing.
Or a missile.
Or a missile. And the quark tune is definitely more aligned with the computer effect. So then satellite and laser beam. So after television, you start to get a merger here, and they're more interplay. So satellite and laser beam is hardware, partly hardware. It's a soft, it's an outer technology, capsule that goes around the planet, like an airplane. But television is more resonant with the satellite global theater effect, because television is seen as a theatrical enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Homeopathic cliche probes. Television is visible and knowable. It sides more with the Reagan side, the ISI side, whereas computer and atom bomb are more invisible, so they go in the homeopathic. So that might be the way they're organized.
Mm-hmm.
There is the... So you got telegraph becomes, two levels down becomes telegraph. Radio doesn't jump twice, but it jumps over into the Shon, whereas telegraph jumped into Shem. Television jumps into Shem. Satellite laser beam jumps into Shem. Computer and atom bomb jump into Shem. Homeopathic cliche probes, they all jump into Shem. So that, it seems, after television, the ALP ground is going into the Shem, more aligned with the Shem.
Mm-hmm.
Telegraph did that, movies did that, radio did not. Actually, the only one that doesn't is radio. That doesn't jump into the Shem.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if that could be accused of being imprecise, but...
Anamorphic?
Anamorphic, yeah. Anamorphic, that's a good alibi. But the thing is, this whole process really becomes anamorphic with the Android meme image in the second chart.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to visualize a complex tactile interplay, and so the visual map is never going to be totally exact or precise.
Right.
So we did Bob Dobbs' formula, which was coevolutionary anticipatory mimesis. Anticipatory means effects preceding the causes, right?
Mm-hmm.
A miming, an unfolding, a learning, as each thing is molded by the ALP column, equals how the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho in American politics. The Battle of Jericho is between Shem, Shon, Issi, NHC, and ALP, but the battle would be more towards the HCE side, because that's top-down bureaucratic ground. That's trying to maintain some kind of bureaucratic power, which would be struggle. But Shem, Shon, and Issi and HCE can't stop the ongoing evolution of ALP,
mm-hmm.
which in a way is predetermined, almost teleologically. It's coming to a point that logically, in retrospect, works. I mean, you extend the eye, and then the ear, and then the hand, and then the interplay, and then the merger of first and second nature logically falls through. Because from television on, those media, as time went on in the second half of the 20th century, they became 24/7. They never stopped. They simulated immortality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they need oil, and that's not the actual merger, but it's the software prefiguring of actual hardware first and second nature merger represented by cold fusion.
Right. So we can loosely group Shem and Shon into categories of cliche or archetype. Cliche or archetypal, depending.
Yeah.
But I don't think we can group ALP into those categories, because they haven't yet become archetype, and they have to become archetype before they can become cliche.
Yeah, now McLuhan defines in the book From Cliche Archetype, the process of something being new in the last word then it becomes a cliche, then an art form, and then an archetype. That four-phase process.
Oh, okay.
After, in the 20th century, you have such a turnover of environments, so once the book becomes archetype, it then flips back to becoming temporary cliche probe. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So the cliche probe aspect is really what... Okay, I should say this. He says the old archetype becomes new cliche, and the new archetype comes from old cliche. So, see, when something is obsolete, it sits there, obsolete state, it's cliche, but then as evolution goes on, the obsolete medium becomes retrieved as an archetype.
Mm-hmm.
So a cliche, as it becomes older and older, gets retrieved and becomes a new archetype. That's what McLuhan says in Cliched Archetype.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually on the book flap for the hardcover version. Now, the archetype, as it gets older and older, it's retrieved not as new archetype, but as new cliche. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting, I guess, if you look at a cover of Explorations that came out in the 50s, they have a Chinese minstrel on one of the covers. Now, that happened by 55, 56. I think it was an issue in that period. That's when Elvis shows up. And you have this new pop culture effect of rock and roll, where you have traveling minstrels. So they're minstrels, but not exactly the archetypal minstrel. They're retrieved as new cliché, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have rock and roll, which is cliché versions of the archetypal minstrel.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling around.
Mm-hmm.
On the road. So I would say ALP is more in the line of cliche probes.
Okay.
See, I have Shemshon and Issy. I have all three are actors. In brackets, retrievals, which means archetypes, and interiorization. Interiorization is another word for art form. So I have Shem, Ossi, Shem, Sean, and Issy as archetypes because they're retrievals and interiorizations.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you could say, we could say they're archetypes. ALP is cliche probe and HCE is art form because he's trying to take the latest developments that he can know and mold them and program them for his bureaucratic purposes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So ALP is cliche probes as the present last word. Each phase is when a new medium is starting to grow, and people have no idea it's going to show up.
Yeah. And then...
okay, can we say this? Hold what you're going to think. So co-evolutionary anticipatory meiosis. Co-evolution means all these five factors are interplaying. It's like across the board is a tactile interplay. Equals how the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho. The battle seems to be going on between Shemshon, Issy, and HCE. The ALP is sitting on the sidelines and winning every battle by creating the next phase that upsets the apple cart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you were going to say something?
I guess I'll just add to what you just said, that and then ALP is not under the direction of any bureaucratic...
Right.
Mechanism. It's just sort of evolving. It's sort of got its own evolutionary cycle. It's evolving on its own.
Well, you have that famous novel called from a couple of years ago called She Stoops to Conquer, I think. It might have been by Henry Fielding. I'm not sure. She Stoops to Conquer. Now, that's in the patriarchal phase of Western civilization. And one of the cliche meanings of that is that the woman pretends to be submissive or... obedient or a slave to the social conditioning, but is actually conquering.
Mm-hmm.
That platitude refers to the process we're showing here.
Right. Some people think that China takes on that role because although they were, the East was, the United States is, you know, got short-term goals, like 10-year goals, and they appear to be meeting and winning their goals, but then in the East, the more egg culture as opposed to the sperm culture, I guess in William Rowan Thompson terms, is slowly, is moving more slowly and more invisibly towards their goal, which they will inevitably reach because they're moving more in a more ALP type rate of speed.
Right, and the you're saying that America has a 10-year plan? Has that been stated somewhere?
No, but a lot of the failures that we're seeing on many levels within the America infrastructure and corporate structure and economy and so on, or people are saying that Americans are impulsive, they want instant gratification, and we have 10-year goals, and we're not thinking down, you know, 25, 50, 100 years towards the future generations.
Oh, those
we're not
are
planning.
Short goals.
Yeah, we're not planning.
Short goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, the advantage America has, though, is the Schumpeter principle of capitalism being what's called creative destruction.
Mm-hmm.
America's always, capital is always collapsing itself into problems, but then innovate because there's room to innovate and temporarily gets itself out of its quagmire.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an aspect I haven't brought up. The five parts of rhetoric, you know, when in pre-literate societies, people engaged in speech and dance and it was an invisible environment. Once we had writing, you could start to see your speech and dance, and that created a little bit of detachment. And eventually, by the time of the Greek phonetic alphabet, that extreme form of writing, it totally dominated the oral culture. It changed it. Homer went out. The poets and writers and scribes came in, so that in philosophy at that time, the oral culture was referred to as the logos, the resonating word. And that was divided into three ways of studying it, since you had writing now. Therefore, you had means of having a first look at the oral culture. So you would analyze the logos, and because writing fragments minds, it ended up dividing the logos into three traditions, the grammarian, the rhetorician, and the dialectician. We talked about that back when we were doing McLuhan, right? You remember that?
Oh, yeah, we started off with those concepts.
Right. So look at this chart as the resonating logos. And Finnegan's Wake is a book image of the resonating logos with the five parts of rhetoric. That was the complementary to the three kinds of sciences, those being dialectic, grammar, and rhetoric. When the grammarian analyzed the word and grammar and thought about how to present what you're analyzing, the art of rhetoric saw five divisions. I don't know if we went into this much in the McLuhan session. And the five divisions were laid out by Cicero about 40, around the time of Christ, just before Christ. And he laid out the laws, rules, and protocols for lawyers, how they could speak effectively, because rhetoric was the art of persuasion. So when you were a rhetorician, when you had something to say, you had to invent something to say. You had to arrange the way to say it. You would have to decorate it. You'd have to remember other facts you needed in your statement, and then you had to put it all together and enunciate it effectively. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So those five parts of effective rhetoric or effective speaking were, one, inventing something to say. That was called inventio. That was the Latin, I-N-V-E-N-T-I-O. The arranging of what you've invented to make it, quote, logical or have syntax was called dispositio, or the disposition. The decorating of what you've basically arranged and ordered was called elocutio. E-L-O-C-U-T-I-O. Dispositio was D-I-S-P-O-S-I-T-I-O. Dispositio. So elocutio was the decorating and fine-tuning of it. And when you were inventing something to say, you had to remember how it was said before or how what you invented would be knowable. So you got to bring in memory. So that was called Memoria, M-E-M-O-R-I-A. Then the final presentation or delivery of the thing you want to be effective was called Pronunciatio, like pronunciation, P-R-O-N-U-N-C-I-A-T-I-O, Pronunciatio, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Did these five parts. Well, when Finning is awake, the five parts of rhetoric match up to the five family members. And the whole interplaying is a family. The five parts of rhetoric are implied by the five levels, five divisions in this chart.
Mm-hmm.
So that Shem is inventio, he's the artist, invents something new. The arrangement and organizing of it, of the invention, is HCE, the father. The decoration of it is Issy. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That's elocutio. The memory aspect is the mother, ALP, and the actual delivery is Sean. Because Sean, in Finning His Wake, is the successful, established inheritor of his father, HCE's dynasty or power position. All right? So Sean is the acceptable son that does well in mainstream terms. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And Sean has to give... There's a whole book. Finning's Wake's made up of four books. But book three is nothing but a lot of angles on Sean's speech. Different aspects, presentations, different environments.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean is a major delivery person. And he's actually... His role in the town, he's the postman. He delivers the letter to
mm-hmm.
his mother
mm-hmm.
in the storyline, supposed storyline. So I just wanted to point out the five parts of rhetoric are involved here. So what you have, though, since we're dealing with environments after the speech environment, well past it, I'm presenting the electrification of the Logos and showing the interplay of all these different media environments that led to cold fusion. So we have here all these HCE things as the bureaucratic intelligence agencies arranging the ongoing legacy of the bureaucracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And ISI is the decoration. The decoration, the ornamental, is the president of the White House, who's an anthropomorphic figure of some kind of stability or progress or whatever the image is supposed to be, in relation to the tumultuous forces around it, which include what was invented and what was delivered and what was remembered. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the ALP ends up as a ground under satellite conditions, what Marshall called a memory theater. So once you get past the satellite, the beginning of the Android meme, which my chart, the tiny note, represents, is a memory theater. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So on side two, we'll go into the memory theater.
Good. All right. So I guess it's just accidental that there's five characters here, and then you have five bodies on your tiny note chart. There's no relation there.
Oh, yes, there is. Because one of McLuhan's claimed big discoveries by the 70s was that he discovered that the reason Shakespeare was in five plays and historical Greek and Latin literature was in five parts. The five-part structure was very important going way back to 400 BC because it represented the five parts of the Logos and of delivery. It was turning the oral culture, which didn't need visual organization of what you were doing. You operate in a different acoustic mode. But once you had writing in the phonetic alphabet, you had to start to include the I and its extension, the phonetic alphabet. So you started to divide up and had to orchestrate what you said. So once you have this phonetic culture, the five is a symbol of the former integrated logos before there was the phonetic alphabet in writing.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So the five is very important.
Okay. One last thought on this before we move on. I was just thinking, I was wondering if how Nietzsche would have to revise his philosophy of the will to power, since I think he was thinking about some kind of personal power or will, the you know, having the will to. He seemed to me that he was talking about having, you know, the personal will to endure.
The Leviathan. Remember, that's the height of the Industrial Age, which is huge, big mechanical environments that seemed inhuman to the sensitive,
mm-hmm.
to the aesthetes. So he was trying to formulate a way of being free from that. The hidden ground is electric media was going to break up and decentralize the Leviathan that was well centralized under industrial conditions. So he was riding on the unconscious effect of the electric autonomy that was coming.
Cool. But, of course, he thought about it in terms of personal will and chemical bodies. I don't think he noticed that all these technologies in their evolution had a will of their own, that ALP was a force of will that was operating outside of the ordinary context that we think of as a human individual.
Right. He being a product of his time, and as Croker says, obsessed with the death of God, he was largely a conceptual person, though he moved towards the perceptual because he presented his writing in the aphoristic style, not in the logical presentation of dialectics and deduction.
Hmm.
So, yeah, he was caught in between, but he was intuiting percept, but it was a conceptual presentation of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's natural, being literate.
Mm-hmm.
Being literate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like McLuhan said about Hegel. He discovered the ground, but he presented it conceptually.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we can go in that. So I think that's enough for this side.
Yeah, okay. So I'll talk to you after the break.
Okay.